Hi, everyone. I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. We are here with Bill Ball to talk everything enablement, revenue operations, go-to-market, and I am super excited today. Bill has a ton of experience, anywhere from starting out in sales. Bill was a field salesperson, all the way into enablement and leadership and leading GTM teams today. So, Bill, thank you very much for being a guest today. If you could tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you're doing and your experience, I'd love to hear.
Sure. And I'll try not to, you know, bore everybody with the history, but right now I'm doing two things. One is I help small and mid-sized companies build or rebuild enablement from the ground up. The other one is a little bit more apropos to current climate, you know, our current economy. In larger businesses, a lot of enablement leaders are thin on team and they need to deliver at scale. So I come in as a co-pilot and help them stretch. I help them strategize and execute and create and run programs that they couldn't do on their own or with their current team. So I work in those two areas, helping people catalyze pipeline, improve talent, improve their GTM, or simply like improve the navigation of the business and its systems, right? Right. Like if people can't find what they need the first time they need it, and you know, when they need it to execute, they're not going to come back. So working across those four areas in smaller and larger companies to help on the enablement side.
Love it. And, you know, maybe tell me a little bit about how you ventured into the world of enablement. So, you know, obviously you were in sales leadership and you made that transition at some point. So tell me a little bit about that.
It wasn't like, okay, I want to be in enablement. maybe kind of, but that didn't come to me until afterwards. I had a dad in sales. And every time the phone would ring in our family house, because he worked for himself, you know, back in the day when there was a phone that would ring, that was the house phone, you know, people would run for it. I got it. My brother and my sister. And it was like 90% of the time was for my dad. So for a while, I didn't want to be in sales, but I got it eventually. I got passionate about things. And once I got passionate about things and connected that back to business, I dove into sales. So I've sold inside, I've sold outside, I've managed people, I've managed managers, I've managed clients. I did all of them at once and had like about 30 direct reports. And that was where my comeuppance happened. I happened to report to the CEO at the time and I was like, I think I'd lost my passion a little bit. Like I was doing it and I cared about the business and I cared about the people, but I, you know, like my passion wasn't rooted in like, okay, well, how can I make, you know, make people or get, help people chase the numbers and all that other kind of stuff every day. And I think that was evident in my work. I was getting like a C plus, you know, I helped the business grow from that, so the CEO and I had a conversation and out of that conversation, it felt like a bad conversation, but my role changed. And we had a boot camp for new people that I had the task of completely changing the methodology for them and the managers and expanding that into an ongoing strategy. And where I thought it was, you know, okay, Bill, you're not doing well and you're a good employee and we're going to go in this direction instead. Like it was really tapping into the thing that got me out of bed every day. And they knew that, right? Like my boss, and so I was fortunate, right? I was fortunate to have that close relationship with my boss of like, okay, Bill, what gets you out of bed every day is working with people and having the light bulb go off and seeing those changes happen at scale. So that's how it happened for me. And once I started, like, once I learned how to facilitate, once I started doing all of those things, you know, just on the talent side of enablement before moving into systems and processes and thinking about pipeline and so forth, it was over, you know, like I found out about, you know, I heard about Scott Santucci, I heard about the Sales Enablement Society, like very, at the very beginning, like I didn't even know what I was doing. At the beginning, but that's what it became. And that's what drives my passion I have for the last 10 years.
That's awesome. And it just goes to show that listening to your people, knowing your people, and having a great mentor can be just life-changing. And, you know, my story is not unlike yours. I had a great mentor. It was right after I had my son, and I was traveling a lot as a field sales manager. I was, you know, road warrior, and it's really hard when you're a mom and have an infant. And but I was always doing the CRM reports, the decks, the training. I was training Challenger. Like, I was doing all that stuff. And you know, I got tapped on the shoulder by my mentor, and she was like, there's this thing called sales ops, and you can do all this stuff, and you don't have to travel as much, and, you know, this and that. And that's kind of how it started, you know? So kudos to all the great mentors out there. And I think it's important too, like, you know, what you're doing now and what I try to do to give back and really work with people, help to find their path. So that's a really great story.
Agree. And I think, not to sidetrack us, but I think that's lost on companies right now. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of companies, right? We're missing out on capitalizing on great talent. And there's a lot of great talent in the marketplace because of it looking for work.
Yeah. Yep. And they want to, you know, pour their passion into what they do. So, yeah, I just love that. And I think it's great to remember that. You know, you and I had a discussion a couple of weeks ago, and we like to get real, which is one of the reasons why I wanted you to be on the podcast. And, you know, with all of your experience, I know you've worked with different companies, you've worn different hats. What's been, I mean, we call it kind of getting real, right? That's what you and I were talking about. You know, what's top of mind when it comes to revenue enablement, revenue operations? What's been real for you? Good, bad, ugly.
So before I start opining on or recounting experiences or something, what I do want to say, because like this is RevOps Unboxed. And part of my attraction to being on here, my excitement and thank you, is the longer I'm in business and in work, the closer I move to science versus art as far as sales mm-hmm. goes. Without processes, you can't mm-hmm. scale, right? At the end of the day, one of the last leaders, one RevOps leaders that I worked with, like, that was our initial conversation, right? It was like he was intent about his meat smoker, and just of he loved not just the end product, but the process of it, and like being able to adjust the process to do it. I'm the same way about coffee. Like, I'm the worst nerd there that ever existed about coffee. I have like a tablet on my espresso machine, and it's just so I can like continue to. I know, like rabbit hole. but it's right. But it's like, how can I keep, you know, certain things the same and tweak others mm-hmm. to continue refining that process to make it better. So the more that I like learn about sales, the more that I see, you know, value the emergence of RevOps and the potential for that to not just be like the reporting people, mm-hmm. you know, and in further years ago, the compensation people and the territory management people, but like the compass. Mm-hmm. And so I think enablement and RevOps have a chance to partner and be that compass. But getting back to your question, I mean, I think, look, every company is different. Every enablement job description that you read is different. Some of them are more similar now these days, but like you go in and you're like, okay, well, marketing doesn't work in this company, so I need to lean in and I need to build case studies or something else. But like, I'll just say, like, there've been places that I imagine you, Sandy, have had to compensate or compliment for enablement. I've had to do it for operations, where it's like, I'll work with really smart data people, but they have nobody's been in sales. Mm-hmm. And so the problem that, or the challenge that is like, okay, well, how do we create a sales workflow in the CRM? Mm-hmm. And then they'll do like, well-meaning, right? But it's like well-meaning people designed the Pontiac Aztec, you know? It's like, you know what I mean? It's like designed by committee, right? And like, not all opinions are equal. So I've had to lean in and say, you know what, like there's a few different types of decision-making, you know, techniques you can use in an executive, but one of them is consensus-based and another one is consult and decide. And when you're designing a CRM workflow, right, it's consult and decide. It's not take everybody's pieces and jam them in there, because then you've got a big mess. And most of the time when I walk into a company, I see a big mess. So that's a place that I may, that I've helped them refine. Just because, like, again, great people, but not always that, not always like attuned to that sales compass, you know, that's going to help the person actually get the information.
Well, and that's how you get the Frankenstack. So I want to drill down on that a little bit more, because sales leader says, hey, you know, we need this checkbox on the deal. And then, you know, marketing says, oh, we need this checkbox on the deal. And, you know, pretty soon you're just throwing a bunch of Band-Aids and duct tape and a bunch of crap in your CRM. And then you wonder why salespeople hate it.
100%. 100%. Like dispositions that make no sense at all. Like totally subjective stuff that does not tell you anything about what happened with the sale. It may be how the salesperson felt at the end of the deal. What does that really tell you about, like, you know, what happened with the customer? So yeah, it could be workflow, it could be dispositions, it could be how you set up calls, like any of that stuff. It's a consultant decide, in my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, the root of this sometimes is, you know, you think of the average tenure of a CRO is like 16 to 18 months. And, you know, I was just talking to a colleague, a former colleague of mine, and she was like, yeah, you know, new CRO is in, I'm redoing this, we've had built this dashboard, I'm redoing this, I'm taking this field out. And it's like, she just did it 12 months ago because there was another CRO, and it, rather than them looking at her as like, well, why is this here? What is the strategy? You know, and she's actually very talented and knows how to build a strategy. So, you know, obviously she's frustrated. She's rebuilding crap that doesn't make sense, putting duct tape and Band-Aids, and, you know, this stuff just continues. It's a cycle. It keeps happening. You know, so I hear what you're saying, but it sounds like what you're saying is this, there's this very deep connection between RevOps and enablement, because they're all in the system, right? They all have to get the shit done, one way or another. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think it may be that it's my background in sales. Like I you know, like, and if I had worked with more RevOps people who had backgrounds in sales, maybe they would have a point of view, right? Like they're trying to get, you know, they're trying to navigate these conversations where they're doing these contribution sessions, like you said, from marketing or who, you know, all of the stakeholders for like the CRM or any tool, but like, that's just the easiest one, 'cause that's the one that gets twisted the most, right? That's right. The one that gets turned into the biggest mess. And it's arguably the most important, 'cause it just plugs into everything. If they can't guide the conversations, like, how do we know what opinion that's coming at them holds more weight? So right. Then that's how you wind up with the Frankenstack of, you know, a million dispositions in it, like goofy stuff, like salesperson having to scroll three screens down to put their information into something. And then it's like, you know, and then you've got acquisitions, right? Where it's like, you know, great, we're moving them all into the same Salesforce, but they have all the same view. Like, you know, like it just turns into a hot mess. And if you've just got really well-meaning, smart people who are like trying to get consensus on stuff versus like box people in, frankly, and drive them to like, okay, what's the outcome that we're looking for? What's the outcome that we're looking for with these like call dispositions or close one, close lost dispositions? Like, what are we trying to get it to tell us versus like your laundry list of stuff that you want to know, right? Like,
right.
Let's think about it that way, right? And let's use the outcome as the compass.
Right.
And that's where I end up finding myself, you know, as an enablement person or as an ex-sales leader or an ex-salesperson, because I've got that point of view, both to facilitate and do those contribution sessions, but because I've got the experience too, and I always have to jump in and fix it. It may not be the first priority, but like,
right,
you know, the old adage of like, anytime you know, I know I'm going to want to put stuff in the bank with these folks later on the sales side. Mm-hmm. And I know that like, okay, well, maybe our methodology isn't in the CRM yet, or there's going to be something that I'm going to ask them to do down the road. We know that's going to happen. Right. So like, if I can pull some stuff out, if I can say, you know, folks, I got rid of all this junk. You know, we did this together. Mm-hmm. RevOps and I did this together. We got rid of all of this noise that, and you don't have it anymore. Like, that's something in the bank. So when I'm asking for something later,
right,
it certainly helps.
Right. Well, I mean, and that right there is the definition of enablement, is you're enabling them to do their job. So you're working with revenue operations to say, hey, we have all these extra fields here, all this extra junk. Is anyone using them? You know, ask for the reports. And, you know, what's in it for RevOps is better adoption of the tool, right? Because RevOps is, you know, I scream and pull my hair out when people are like, oh, I put this in OneNote or something. I'm like, oh, good Lord, why did you do that? So I would imagine RevOps gets excited if enablement is saying, hey, you know, maybe if you eliminate these fields, I can help, you know, to you know, get more engagement there. And then for the salespeople, there's less crap for you to have to fill out. You can find the stuff faster, you know, and then, so it's kind of like a win-win-win in a perfect world. Obviously, worlds aren't perfect and it's easier said than done, but, you know, at the end of the day, salespeople, we want them selling, right? And I don't know what the latest data is, but it's something like less than a third of their time is spent with prospects and customers, and they're in just all the crap, and that's what fuels me. And, you know, while what my team has built isn't perfect, you know, that's what we strive towards, right? So everything that we do, and if we accidentally put something out there that is cumbersome, then we do our best to try to fix it, right? So we get the feedback, we get the engagement, provide alternative solutions, you know, things like that. And I think all those things you said are important, and you have to push back sometimes on sales leaders, right? You know, they want the thing here, they want this. And, you know, I always try to understand the why. So, I mean, have you experienced this with folks that you've worked with, or even as being on the sales side at some point?
Absolutely. It's again, this is anything, right? You said it. It's enablement, right? It's the same thing as like a go-to-market motion, right? There's a brand new go-to-market motion. It changes the ICP. There's messaging. There's practice. There's a whole bunch of things that we both know need to happen to make sure that the people carrying the message are ready to do it. Right. And we can prove that they're ready to do it, because in some cases with some kinds of customers, you only get a few chances. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing when that, you know, you lay all that out and then the sales leader's like, great. Can we do it in my 30 minute, like, all hands meeting on Monday? Can we do that? Right. So it's taking them back to like, okay, so let's talk about the outcome that we're trying to achieve. Right. Right. It's the same thing with the CRM. It's the same thing with everything. Right. It's using that outcome in those contribution sessions as like a North Star and reminding people of it. Right. Like I beat it like a drum the entire time. Like, you know, I'm sure people get sick of hearing it, but it's like, it's one thing. It's like, I love how you're saying why, because that mm-hmm. taps into their emotions a little mm-hmm. bit. Right. Like, why do you want this? Right. Because like, then that's like that person feeling hurt. Mm-hmm. Okay. How does that get us to our outcome?
Right.
Right. And then hopefully we start making connections there. Right. Like, and then you can drive a little bit.
This is my inner Dr. Phil. I want to understand why you do the things you do, why the behaviors are the way that they are. But it does help. It does help me as a RevOps leader to understand, like, why do you feel like you need to download that Excel file? And it's like, it could be because I've set it up in a crappy way to where you can't get what you need. And so then that's on me. I need to fix it. And then you can go keep downloading your Excel spreadsheet until I fix it. Right. So I do like to ask why. And then to your point, how do we get there? You know, what's the delta? What's the outcome that we're looking for? I wanted to drill down on something you said, though, because it came up for me recently and it's interesting, is go to market. So companies launching a new product, who should run the go-to-market?
That's when we get into shoulds, and I've been in so many different companies, I've had to run it. Product marketing has led it, and I've been more of the tip of the spear. I think I've had sector leaders who have been, you know, strategic and at least been able to put the strategy together, do it. As far as X, it just depends on what part of it you're talking about, right? Is it the messaging? Mm-hmm. Is it the like helping, you know, the salespeople or the CX people or whoever the audience is carry it to market? I see those as different kinds of responsibilities. Right. I don't mean to give you such a nuanced answer, Sandy, but I am kind of curious about where you're going with it, right? Because I will pose an opinion, because that's why I wanted to be on this podcast, because you don't hold back. And it's like, I'm seeing a trend, and not everywhere, right? But like, there's this emerging sort of like, okay, it's go to market, but it's just product marketing. Like it's a new product, right? Marketing, and they're showing salespeople a movie, and it's rah rah rah, and there's no practice, and there's no engagement, and it fits into that window for that sales leader. It's like, right, it looks good, but like, right, nobody's learning anything. It's sales engagement, like, which is great. Right. And which is important, and you need to have those things in all hands and whatever else. But if they don't get any, if it's not, it's like an if-then statement, right? See, now you got me going. If there's no major changes, like rah-rah movie, awesome. If there are significant, right, changes that require practice, there's probably some other parts and pieces that we need to throw in, even like the CRO favorite word certification, you know, like, sure. Mm-hmm. But like making sure that people are ready and proving that they're ready, I think is a step that's getting skipped because it takes work, and it takes enablement. So that's my take on go to market. Where were you going with it, Sandy?
I was just curious because there's a lot of responsibilities that, you know, if you look at a RACI sheet in a go to market plan, whoever owns that plan, you know, you've got the sales training checkbox, you got the update the CRM checkbox, you know, all these things that, you know, you're kind of leading up to get a deadline, but is it going to be impactful? And so I think sometimes, I think it's challenging, and there's, you know, this idea of go to market operations, right? And, you know, what role is that, and how does, where does RevOps cross over, and how does that kind of evolve? Because I think ultimately you have to be thinking about the revenue. And the number one question that I'll ask, you know, when there's a new product launch is like, okay, what's the revenue goal? Well, I don't know. We just need to sell products.
Exactly. How are you measuring
like you get,
it?
And if it's, and this is the most common thing when it, especially when it's being led, you know, from product marketing, it's like, well, you know, we're going to sell more. It's like, okay, well, what does that mean? You know, how
much
are we targeting?
More? What's your year? Is it year over year? Right. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I think it's a challenge, and I think every company is different, and, you know, smaller companies are obviously going to have less cooks in the kitchen. But the bigger the company, the more cooks in the kitchen, the more, you know, I think things are on the line. But I've just found these experiences in my career at different organizations to be very checkboxy, right? It's like, okay, there's this, you know, RACI chart with a project management thing, and they've determined that I'm just responsible for this task, but my experience might actually lend to more insight, but I'm just, you know, reporting out on my task, right? And it makes no freaking sense to me. And then the people, you know, that are running this stuff get pissed off when you're like, well, hey, what about this? What about this? Well, you know, it's not, it, you know, you're not, that's not your role on the list. And it's like, well, okay, well, who determined that was my role and that I wasn't part of this other conversation? Who's so much smarter that they've determined that, you know, other folks that should be involved because they actually have background? And that's where I get a little bit like, okay, you know, how does this all, how, you know, what are the best practices that organizations do around go to market? Because I think a lot of companies struggle. They might have a great product they're trying to put out, but then they're kind of stepping on themselves because they don't know how to do it.
This is why I'm here, right? Like that. And I'm like, so I'm thrilled to hear you get wound up about it, but, like you just did to me, I want to say what I heard. And one of them, and your listeners are probably already sick of it, right? But it's like one of them, it's like you went right to the outcome. It's like, what are we trying to improve? Mm-hmm. You know, what are we trying to change with the customer? And you're right. I've had those discussions before and they're like, yeah. But like there's other people that have measurements and that kind of thing, whether there's a, you know, the accountability loop and all that other stuff's another thing. Another thing is the checkbox. In my seniorness of enablement, I've gotten a little bit better about being a hothead about this stuff, but it's like, you'll start to build something, right? Or you'll start to make something and they're like, wait, what are you doing? We already have a website with all of the use cases. Why did the salespeople need to practice it? And it's like, you go to this website and it's like, yes, it's like, it's beautiful, but it's like three sentences and it's all product. It's not buyer-centric right. at all. It's like no messaging that salespeople can use. So it's like, but they're like, but I did this, right? And they're like, mm-hmm. I showed my boss it. Like, it's like, are you working for it to help the team and help the company grow and help the scale? Or are you just trying to get your job done?
Right.
And I think those things are a little different.
Oh, so you just made me think of something. So, there was some training that was rolled out and, you know, it was in a Zoom and, you know how well we retain these things with the forgetting curve. Well, this salesperson in the meeting was like, you know, I didn't know we did XYZ. And then the response was like, well, that was in the training that was done 3 weeks ago. Like, how do you not have it memorized? And I'm sitting there going like, guys, we need to have more discussion about it. We need to have social learning. We need to, you know, nobody's going to remember, you know, the 52,000 things that were on the 48 page deck that was done in a 30-minute Zoom training. Of course, the guy's not going to remember this stuff. And by the way, it doesn't even matter because it's a bunch of features and stuff. So like, let's really get down to the enablement side of things. So, but that's another kind of result of like, well, we did the training, we checked the box. You now should know everything you need to know about this, you know, whatever the thing is.
I mean, look, and you've heard all my fire on this. And I will get back to one thing that you said, because I want to address what you just talked about. Cause you're going to hear my heartstrings too. I'm a sensitive guy. Who should be in charge of all of this? I think it's the person who is coordinating, mm-hmm. right? Like the person who's coordinating all of those efforts, the department that's coordinating all those efforts successfully. Right. Because I've seen go-to-market efforts be like somebody speaking from a pulpit, like a sector mm-hmm. leader, like just being like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. And then I've also seen like the product marketing movie of like this and this and this, and like maybe there's some questions or whatever else, and then everybody's quiet because they ask if anybody has any questions, right? Like it's not a probing question, or a facilitation where they call certain people out, or they have plants where they bring people in. Like these are, I'm showing some of the enablement toolbox stuff here, but like what you just said really hit me, because you know it's like I've heard this like one of the first big learning curves that I went through was, you know, going back to the beginning of our conversation, when I was trying to turn a boot camp into an ongoing development plan, was like when new hires didn't know something, right? And I'm human and I didn't, you know, do everything the exact same way. I, you know, every single time, like I brought people through that, you know, new hires through and all that onboarding. I'd hear like, Bill, they didn't, the new people or two of the new people didn't like know this. So let's put, add this into the onboarding. Let's add this in the onboarding. And then like, you end up Frankenstacking onboarding. It's like, there's no way, there's just no way. Like, you're pushing the power of Niagara Falls through a straw. Right. And that's like my dad analogy for today. And with the way things are right now, there's that company where like, that you were talking about, where like the person didn't remember the training. It's like, they probably got one enablement person and they're being asked to do 45 things, you know, and you can do 45 things. Sure. Sure. Cause I want this job and I want to own tech and I want to own messaging and I want to do all these things. I'm going to spin all these plates and get a D minus. So God bless that person for trying. Right. But they're also probably not dedicating the time or dedicating the investment to helping those people be successful either.
Totally, 100%. And it's enablement's a strategy, right? It is not just check a box, we did a training or we have our weekly training or our monthly session on a Zoom. There's so much more to it in terms of ingraining the systems, you know, working together, collaborating. I mean, what are some of your best practices or really, you know, ultimately like an ideal wish list of enablement?
I mean, I love this because I think this is what just queued up in my brain when you asked me that question, Sandy, is how RevOps and enablement need each other and benefit from each other. And I think that's the way forward. In my mind, like, and this is just me, this is my experience speaking, right? Like when I started out doing enablement, you know, or when I was in like, after company one into company two, building it up from the ground up, I'm like, I just need a data person, right? I just need a data person. I don't want a data person anymore. Like, I don't need just somebody who's helping me measure my stuff because I'm, like I said, I'm spinning 40 other plates. I want a partner with a point of view. And it needs to be those two things. And where my expertise, as hopefully I've laid out however dramatically today, lives in driving change and coming up with creative problem solutions and training and messaging and so forth. Someone that is better rooted in the cold hard facts and the science of the business that can help me with my compass is I believe what's needed. So like we can get granular, right? Like what's on my wish list? Like that's my biggest wish list is like having an awesome RevOps partner. I've had great bosses in RevOps. What I really want is a partner. So we could talk about things like, this gets back to your go-to-market question, like how do we coordinate release calendars to balance out some of the change that's hitting teams, right? That's go to market, that's enablement, that's RevOps. How all of that other stuff hits people and making sure that it doesn't hit them at the same time and it hits them in a meaningful, communicative way, not like okay, these are the changes that we're making in Salesforce and I'm the data scientist writing this to all the salespeople because nobody else is for some strange reason, and I'm gonna make it a white paper, so it's not just coordinating all of the stuff, it's like how it gets communicated. And that's at the top of my wish list is like, how, you know, what are we hitting people with? Like, is it a migration of something? Is it a new piece of tech? Is it a methodology? Because all of those things have to have both enablement and RevOps like spinning at the top.
You know, you made me think of something with that coordinated calendar. I love that. And I think especially bigger organizations with more departments and more products probably suffer from this, but I'll get hit with, oh, we need to train the sales team on this. And then they just put the meeting directly on the salespeople's calendar. And then I'm like, whoa, you know, we need to coordinate this. I'm enablement, like got my enablement hat on. And, you know, I like to schedule it. I like to see what they're trying to accomplish. What is your positioning? What's the timing on this? Because, hey, we actually have something scheduled the day before. We want to be, you know, we want to get it in a consumable way, not have competing things on their calendars, not have them back to back on internal things, you know. So, I mean, I think that's important. That's an important point for people listening. And even if it's simple as a CRM training, right, for a process change or something, there needs to be some sort of coordinated governance for who you're targeting in those, you know, those deliverables.
Well, God forbid you have any empathy for the people that you're delivering to or delivering for or working on behalf of, Sandy. God forbid, because, you know, I mean, look, I see it as a choice, right? And companies are making these choices all the time, right? Do you want to have stuff in a nice little package and check it off because it's done? Or are you actually trying to get to an outcome? Like, how does this help? I keep saying that word, and people are sick of it, right? But like, how does this help us get to where we're going to go? You know, does this help us check a box? Or does this help us get to where we need to go? And like, what do we need to think about as we're dropping this and communicating this and helping people navigate this change, right? Businesses are people first, right? And dealing with people, you've got to deal with all that, right? It's the why and the outcome.
Yeah, exactly. The why and the outcome. And if the outcome is you want people to actually learn the thing, then I think you also have to determine what the best method is, right? So everybody thinks throwing an hour Zoom meeting on the calendar is the answer to training on the thing. And I'm guilty of it, because sometimes it's easier just, well, I know they're around this time, I'm just going to throw this meeting on. But can you create a 2-minute video that they can catch on their phone, right? That just gets to it. Can you make something in a small chunk versus them sitting and rotting in a meeting that they're not paying attention to anyway because they're multitasking, right? You know, how do you, you know, and I think as enablers, you know, we have to push back on other leaders too, to say, I'm going to govern this. I'm going to gate this because how important is it? We want people to learn it. And is the best way you're proposing the actual best way?
Yeah, that's a really interesting dance, because I've had leaders say, you know, protect because they're so worried about hitting their sales goal. Right. But eventually it's inertia, right? And you've got to drive the business forward. So like, when are we going to tackle this, and when's a better time? And that kind of, and sometimes like people have to juggle things. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely come to that place where I've like gone way over into the sales leader spectrum, because like that's where my heart is, right? Like, those are the people that bear the brunt of so much garbage and have to make so many goofy decisions and protect their team at all costs. But I think we're also tasked with driving the business forward. So figuring out what is the sort of the nexus between those two things is really, really important with sales ops and rev ops. Another thing that I think would be on my wish list would be, you know, like, I've been with RevOps teams that do these QBRs, and it's like, this is how this part of the business is doing. This is how this part of the business is doing. Cool. Like, that's awesome, right? Check. What about tracking the customer journey and presenting a point of view on where to focus, right? Like, how do we get together and kick butt on that?
Right.
Like, that's the, because like, not only is this what's happening, but this is what we're going to do. I think the teams need each other for that.
Right.
Those are probably at the top of my wish list. I mean, we can talk about like tools and, you know, not operating on usage and all that other kind of stuff, you know, and actual strategy, but those are the two that are at the top of my wish list.
I love it. I love it. I'm sure we can go on and on and on. I would like to know, what are some tips or game changers or lessons or something you'd like to leave the listeners with as we wrap up?
Well, hopefully they've taken some things from our mutual passion of this sport that's RevOps and enablement, because I think that's how we both approach it. I think when I'm creating something, you know, or when I'm asked to bring change in, right? Let's get back to what we were just talking about, because that's what's going to be on somebody's mind. I'm thinking about, well, how can I make this a with versus an at? How can I help people feel like they're a part of this change versus the change is happening at them? And that's really, really important to me. Like, not everybody exercises that level of care, but then there's a lot of people that are just checking boxes and trying to get their job done. Think about something as like painstaking, mm-hmm. and not for you and I, but like for everyone else in the world, exit criteria, something mm-hmm. like that, right? How do you make, I'm making Sandy laugh. How do you make exit criteria like something that's owned by the sales leaders that they're excited about to bring in and usher in? You make them part of that process of building it. I took a control group of stuff for them to yell at. Like, I built something up, pre-built something, and they're like, no, not this, but this, not this, but this, you know? And I got to the why and the outcome of all of that. And then guess what? People believed in the exit criteria.
Yeah.
The forecasting and the pipeline progression got better. So it's nice. It's getting that with building those things with people.
Yeah.
And not at them is a little nugget that I can provide today.
I mean, that's so huge. And it's easy to skip steps when we're under the pressure and you have time, you know, don't have as much time. But it's important to stop and get that input and do it with them and get them bought in the process. And if people have a chance to get their hands in it and give you some feedback, you're going to have a lot better chance to adopt and not have all the, challenges, if you will, with compliance.
We want owners, yeah. right? Like every CEO is like, I can't think of a CEO who's going to disagree with me, right? They want owners in the business, right? Even though people don't own, it's a cultural thing, right? Like, if people own the things that are happening to them and own the changes and all that kind of stuff versus like feel like changes are just coming at them. Like, there's so many benefits associated with that.
It's just great. I really, really could go on and on, but I think we need to wrap up. Maybe I'll have you come back on and we'll do Bill Ball 2.0. So I really appreciate your time today. It's been a really fun discussion. Look forward to continuing to connect with you. Thanks again, Bill. All right, everybody. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed. We will see you next time.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.